Radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Draft a sensible conscience clause.
Never before has the federal government forced organizations to buy a product that violates their conscience.
If you think abortion's murder, should you have to pay for it?
You're asking the right question.
They have decided to declare war on the church.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Religious liberty will be protected.
Are you quite sure?
Federal conscience laws will remain in place.
But there's a lot more to his story, believe me.
This is the key.
We have a year to violate our consciences.
Never have I seen greater resolve on the part of Catholics.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
The American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you. It's good to be with you. In this hour, we sit down with a man who I've enjoyed for many, many years now, Father Robert Sirico, president of the Acton Institute. I remember back, it must have been the early 1990s when we met. Could have been late 80s. But I've watched his work go on in that time, and I have to say, he's a man who has helped change the debate over Christianity and the free market in America. We're going to talk about his book, Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. And I think you'll enjoy hearing Father's perspective on this. He's a frequent guest with us here on Crest in the Afternoon, and you see him on other programs as well. But I remember when I first came out of college and was trying to think through some of these issues. It was generally assumed, believe it or not, it was generally assumed that the moral high, that the socialist had the moral high ground, and the capitalist was the one who was having to play catch up. And really, and today you don't see that for the most part. People seem to be aware that the moral choice is the free choice. The moral choice, when it comes to economy, is to encourage freedom, because it gives us more information. It generates the kind of information we need for producers to make choices. And I think a lot of that has to do with the work of Father Sirico over this generation. Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy, coming up today with Father Robert Sirico. But first, what we do is we hit today's headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al, and welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, May 30th. It is the feast of St. Gregory the Seventh, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Pope Benedict XVI is calling recent coverage of leaked documents exaggerated. Catholic News Service reports he delivered a mild scolding directed at the news media in remarks at a weekly audience in the Vatican. The pontiff said coverage has gone, quote, far beyond the facts, end quote. Benedict was referring to leaks of private letters this year and also to the arrest this month of his personal assistant. The assistant was arrested after Vatican police said they found private documents in his living quarters. An investigation is pending. A group trying to put Maryland's new same-sex so-called marriage law up for a voter referendum in November says it has more than doubled the numbers of signatures needed to achieve its goal. The Maryland Marriage Alliance says it has submitted about 113,000 petition signatures, far exceeding the minimum number required of just under 56,000.
I stand here today as a representative of thousands of Marylanders from across this wonderful state who have tirelessly worked to ensure that Marylanders get the opportunity to vote on this critical issue.
Alliance Executive Director Reverend Derek McCoy says the effort was absolutely exhilarating and that Marylanders have a right to vote on this issue. And a member of one of the most flourishing orders of active religious in the United States has been named executive director of the Secretariat of Catholic Education at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Sister John Mary Fleming, a Nashville Dominican, has held administrative positions at the college and secondary school levels. She received her licentiate degree in canon law from Catholic U and her master's degree in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville. And now your fascinating fact for the day. In a study that was done in 1907, it was concluded that the easiest color to spot is yellow. That is why John Hirsch, founder of the Yellow Cab Company, picked yellow as the color of his cabs. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
I'm Al Cresta. Father Robert Sirico has been active in public policy affairs for more than 30 years. He co-founded the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty in 1990 after finding that religious studies students lacked training in fundamental economic principles, and that left them poorly equipped to understand and address many of today's social problems, problems like unemployment, like the morality of free markets. Father has been a frequent guest here on Crest in the Afternoon, and we've loved our work with the Acton Institute and Acton University over the years. He just published, though, Defending the Free Market, the Moral Case for a Free Economy, and it's my great pleasure to welcome to this microphone again Father Robert Sirico, president of the Acton Institute. Father, good to have you back. Thanks.
Always great to be with you, really. My favorite program to be on.
Well, thank you. Let's talk, let's go back to very basic things here. I remember during the liberation theology debate, the presumption was that liberation theologians were applying the gospel in ways that would liberate the poor, that it was showing concern for, compassionate concern for those who were without land, who were without sometimes employment, the what sometimes is called the underclass. And so liberation theology was presented as, you might say, the economic gospel, the good news. But the question always was, does liberation theology liberate?
Right.
Does it do what it claims it's going to do? In other words, is it going to make for human flourishing? Is that the question we should ask of any economic system?
Well, yes. I mean, that's one question we should ask. On the when you say human flourishing, I think we need to be very careful that we mean by that more than just economic prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But whether or not human beings can flourish, one side effect would normally be that they flourish economically as well. But you don't want to make the mistake, on the other hand, I probably said it a dozen times on your show, the mistake liberation theology makes is in demonizing the rich,
right,
and in canonizing the poor. The mistake that the prosperity gospel makes on the other side, and I've been accused of this, but I'm not guilty of it, is that we canonize the rich and demonize the poor.
Yeah.
Of course, that's not true
either. Right.
So, yes, I think the way the bishops put it in their 1986 pastoral letter, a letter with which I had some disagreements, but I think this was quite right. They said the moral test of any society is the way in which it treats its most vulnerable members.
Yeah. Yeah. How is it that, well, let's say capitalism is often accused of being heartless. It is creative destruction. It has no concern for people. Why does it have that reputation?
Well, I think the most egregious examples of greed and the kind of disregard for human decency have been popularized in the media, and I think that those kinds of examples exist. I don't think that it characterizes the whole or the normative way in which the market operates, because most people go into a grocery store and are treated decently, and they come back and they, you know, buy shoes, you know,
yeah,
things like this.
That's capitalism.
That's really capitalism. Now, the term capitalism is problematic because it has Marxist overtones, and it's far too narrow because it just focuses on supply and demand and profit and all the rest. So it can lead to a superficial understanding of what the economic dimension of human nature is about. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to do in this book is broaden the whole concept of what economics is, that it's not fundamentally about finances, it's more fundamentally about human action, human values, the human community.
So it's best, is it even helpful to use the word capitalism, or are we better off just talking about free markets?
Well, you know, Pope Blessed John Paul II answered that question in his encyclical Centesimus Annus. I think it's number 42, where he says, you know, should we ask the question now with the collapse of, I'm kind of paraphrasing him, with the collapse of real socialism, is capitalism the system we should recommend to the developing world? And then he goes on to define two kinds of capitalism. One that you cannot accept, that we wouldn't recommend, and that's a kind of godless capitalism that you're talking about, without any boundaries, without any laws, without any juridical structure. And the other is a system of economic exchange based on private property, characterized by, you know, all these other things, that's moral and situated in a broader juridical context. He says, if this is what we mean by yes, then that's what we should recommend. But perhaps it's better not to call it capitalism, but to call it a market economy, a free economy, or a business economy.
Interesting.
So I think it is a better set of phrases. And I've tried to use that, and I express my ambivalence in the book about the word capitalism.
Yeah. I know a little bit about your background. I know you were an activist and a former liberal. I just learned that
you're kind of a soft socialist.
Rubbed elbows with Jane Fonda, I hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
And other things. I'll have to read the book to find that out.
When did you discover the merits of the free market?
Well, it was in those days, shortly after, you know, when I was involved with the Campaign for Economic Democracy and the gay movement and the feminist movement and you name it, and I was there. A friend of a friend of mine, I had an argument with him. I didn't really know him very well. He was just a neighbor to a friend. And he thought, repeated it many times, he said, "You are delightfully dumb." He said, "I'm going to have to educate you."
Yes.
And we began a series of conversations lasting over 6 months, over dinner and, you know, lots of conversation. And he brought me books and got me to think, and it really precipitated change, because about that point I was an agnostic. I'd become an agnostic. I'd left the practice of my faith many years earlier in my teens.
Okay.
And the more I considered the arguments he was putting forth in favor of private property, the more I considered, you know, who is this human being who has the right to private property? The human person who is physical and yet more than physical. And it's that point at which I return to the faith.
Wow.
In that period of time, I recalled what the nun had told me, or told our class, really, back in Brooklyn, when she just got us reciting the catechism. Who made you? God made me. Mm-hmm. Why did God make you? To love him, serve him in this world, to be forever with him in the next. What is man? It's a being composed of body and spirit. And all these things began coming back, and I began to see how they fit in the real world. And I happened to be in Europe. I was taking the grand tour for a month, you know. And I ended up in Rome, and I had this kind of quasi-spiritual experience, and came back from Italy, and a priest showed up on my doorstep, not with any religious intent. And I invited him to come in, and I said, "I think I want you to hear my confession."
Wow.
13 years at that point, I remember saying, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 13 years since my last confession." And he looked at his watch.
You didn't offer him a glass of Gallo wine.
Gallo wine, no, in those days, no. I don't think there's any Gallo wine, and there is still no Gallo wine in my house, but not for political reasons.
I remember the boycott.
Yes, and the iceberg lettuce and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Now, so I'm just curious. At that point, you've reaffirmed your faith.
I did,
back into communion. But
I was. But
normally, things don't happen overnight, though.
Changes. Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. No, from that point on, it took me a good 3 years to really kind of... I had to catch up with the church again. I mean, when I went back to Mass, I was shocked. The priest was facing the people. The Mass was in English. There was talk of liberation theology. There was... It was just so different from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I went to see a spiritual director as a Benedictine priest at the time. And, I had some really good priests who helped me along the way. It was Benedictine at one point, a Dominican who was there the whole time. Even when I was away from the church, I would go and talk to him. Just, you know, he just listened and expressed real kindness to me. And he was the one I finally asked to preach my first Mass when I came back to the church, because he'd been there through the whole thing with me. And this one Benedictine said, well, why don't you read St. Augustine's Confessions? And that was a real eye-opener, you know, especially where Augustine says, you know, he speaks about this this beauty, ever ancient, ever new. I knew you in myself, but I didn't know you, kind of thing. I quote the entire thing at the end of the book because it's so meaningful to me. I'd love to have part of that on my tombstone because it was really my own journey. I kind of knew him in an incoherent way. And he never let go of me. He pursued me and protected me. I mean, I can only see that in retrospect, the way in which he protected me. I could be dead right now, very honestly.
You were in some pretty pretty destructive circles there for a while.
Oh, it was, and it could have been. I mean, it was very dangerous, but I didn't know it. You know, who was that poem? That poem that talks about how God protects mad dogs and Englishmen in the hot noonday sun. and I kind of like a Mr. Magoo walking, you know, off of one ledge onto another thing and not knowing it. Now, in retrospect, sometimes I'm horrified at how close I came.
But what was driving you? Was it? I mean, you obviously were involved in the. It sounds as though that you were trying to affirm something important, though,
about
human dignity, even
in
those darkened days.
I was very confused. I was very confused from my teenage years. I remember, you know, the normal, well, maybe even more than normal dysfunction in my own home. But then when I went to a priest to ask questions about God that had been raised by a classmate of mine, I got no answers. He just told me to read Mark Twain. You know? I look back and I see exactly what was going on. He had probably read The Secular City by Harvey Cox.
So
the best way to get people into religion was to not be religious.
So somehow that would attract them.
Right.
Make them seem more real.
Didn't work for me.
Didn't work for me either. So hold it there, Father. We'll come back and continue the conversation. My guest, Father Robert Sirico, he is the author of Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy.
Our economists believe conditions are improving and that worthwhile investment opportunities could be plentiful. Now could be a great time to consider the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. These pro-life, pro-family mutual funds have a strong track record. Ask your financial advisor about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds or call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 1-866-283-6274 or visit AveMariaFunds.com to learn more. Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Logos Bible Software brings the sacred tradition to life, fully integrated with Scripture. Logos links the Bible to hundreds of books, from the works of St. Augustine to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, literally surrounding the Scripture with the tradition. And Logos works on your desktop and your mobile devices, so you can take your vast Catholic library wherever you go. Logos will transform the way you read the Bible. A demo video is available at logos.com/Catholic.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
I'm Clark Durant, founder of Cornerstone Schools Detroit. Will you bring your little light to help a child become all God hopes for, whatever your light may be? For two decades, 95% of Cornerstone students have graduated from high school and become adults of good character. This happens because of the support of others like you. Go to cornerstoneschools.org to support our walk at the zoo or to support a student.
Hi, I'm Celia Miles, a Cornerstone graduate. Cornerstone changed my life. Our students need your help. Would you join Clark Durant and me at the zoo June 10th?
God said, "Let there be light," and there was. Let your light shine in a student's life. Visit cornerstoneschools.org.
Friday, June 8th, citizens will gather by the thousands in cities across America and stand up for religious freedom. I'm Monica Miller, National Co-Director of Stand Up for Religious Freedom. Please join this public witness June 8th. In January, the Department of Health and Human Services announced a new mandate that forces Catholic employers, including schools and hospitals, to violate church teaching by providing contraceptives and abortion-inducing drugs to their employees. Every bishop has spoken out against the mandate, calling it an attack on religious freedom. The bishops are calling on the faithful to protest the mandate. Join the nationwide rally for religious freedom Friday, June 8th, 12 noon. Find a rally near you at standuprally.com. Stand up for religious freedom June 8th, 12 noon. Learn more at standuprally.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the St. Gregory Retreat Center, a fully licensed and internationally accredited alternative to traditional drug and alcohol treatment. This model has utilized the latest techniques based on the most current scientific research. More information about the St. Gregory Retreat Center is available at 888-778-5833. That's 888-778-5833.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. With me, Father Robert Sirico, president of the Acton Institute and author of Defending the Free Market, the Moral Case for a Free Economy. I remember when we first met, I think I had just either entered the church or was on the verge of it.
No, you weren't in the church when we first met.
When we first met. Okay, I hadn't gotten
that. I remember trying to hook you.
Right. But
come home to Rome. That kind of thing.
That's right. I remember, that we talked about Ayn Rand, and you were writing
later.
For the
Detroit. That was later.
Yep. You were talking about the Detroit News. You were
right.
Editorial board there. And you were a priest who was savvy in economic matters and also defending free markets at a time when most Catholic priests, it was assumed, were almost closet socialists.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not exactly true, but I'm saying most people assumed that a Catholic priest would talk badly about free economy. Yeah, in profit, in business.
Yeah.
Things seem to have changed quite a bit.
Yeah, especially among these young guys.
Yeah.
You know, I joke, I live in a religious community, as you know, and I joke with people and say, I'm the liberal in my house. I mean, these young guys are ferocious.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. I was taught by one young priest how to say the old mass. So, I mean, not that that deals with economics, of course, but it
certainly changes.
It's a certain economy, you know. There's what is the word? I can't think of it in Latin, but we talk about this holy exchange of gifts.
Yeah.
play with that idea. But no, I think it has changed a great deal. I mean, communism ended. The liberation theology was discredited,
even though
it's trying to make its way back. But you see now priests who are my age and older are the ones who are still attached to those kinds of ideas.
Yeah.
I was an exception in my day, and it was, you know, there was a lot of pressure. But now the younger guys, I'd like to think that it has to do something with the work of the Acton Institute.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of other folks and good people who, like Michael Novak and others, who have written extensively on this as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think things are considerably different today, and certainly discussion is a lot richer today. I mean, I can remember when people would, if you talk about redistribution of wealth and really what can we do to make things more just. Now people frequently, they don't start there. They start saying, well, wait a minute. How can you talk about redistribution of wealth if you don't want to talk about creation of wealth?
Exactly. What are you going to redistribute?
Yeah, exactly. So the conversation at a popular level, I think, has come a long way. But let's talk about that. Why Americans love liberty. They love freedom. And they have to make the connection that you can't have freedom without a free economy.
Right. And the reason for that, and I think we're seeing this, by the way, in the whole debate, which you've probably done a lot of shows on this, the whole debate over the Obamacare and
yes.
the mandate.
Yes.
But we're seeing that in a very concrete way there, that if you restrict the economy, you restrict choices that people make. So you restrict people's freedom in other spheres, like religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to it being about the right of religious freedom, this question of the mandate, it's also about the right to private property. Do we have the right to govern our institutions and to have them have a certain characteristic? Or are all communal and social obligations of society primarily met by the state? By the political apparatus, and that's really what we're discussing. This is why, by the way, this is such an important question beyond Catholics, beyond contraception, beyond even abortifacients and sterilization. This is a vital interest to anyone who's interested in their own freedom, whether they're a believer or not.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, I agree. Is part of the problem that when you have a planned economy, when you don't have a free economy, you restrict the choices, as you say, but don't you also restrict the free flow of information?
Precisely.
Producers don't get a chance to know what the market's really thinking because they have so few choices.
Yeah. Let me break that down a little bit because it almost sounds too abstract. Does the market think?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Here's what you're saying by that. When you or I go to a store to buy something, when we make that purchase, which we're doing freely, nobody's making us do it, we say, you know, this is what I want, and I'd rather have that than the money I'm going to pay for it. And the producer and then the person who's selling it would rather have the money than the product or the service.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you do that over the whole of a society, what ends up happening is that is a whole bunch of information that reveals the selective or the subjective choices on the part of consumers. That's what you mean by the market. In other words, it's not an abstraction at all.
That's right.
It's personal choice. It's human action. And that information is sent back to the producer who says, boy, these are really selling like hotcakes.
Right.
Let's produce more of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, we put this thing out there, put all this investment, and nobody's buying it. Let's stop producing.
Right.
Or, you know, somebody else on the other end of the market says, boy, they're selling those. Let's make them, but of a different color or a different size or a different, you know, and then you get competition going. And all of this is intelligence. And when you put in the middle of that very delicate process of information exchange, you put in the middle of that restrictions or taxation or blockades or tariffs or regulations, you are eviscerating knowledge. You're eviscerating intelligence in society. So we become dumb. So we overproduce because we thought it would sell, or we overborrow. I mean, this is the whole housing crisis that we're describing
here. Right.
The market wasn't there to tell people, you know, don't pay this much for this house because the government guaranteed loans. Good intentions, by the way. They wanted poor people to have access to homes. The problem is poor people are what? Poor.
Well, they're poor.
They can't afford those homes.
Yes, yes, they can't afford the homes, nor do they necessarily, they may not necessarily have had the social and cultural experience of maintaining a home in the past.
Or needing as big a home.
Or needing
a lot
as big
of people
yeah.
bought up.
Yeah.
And then the bankers are being told, well, these aren't really risks to us because the government's going to pay them back if they default.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
So then you have this whole huge mess.
Yeah. It's really... people get hurt. And you know, the funny thing here is that people get hurt because of this. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, this actually diminishes people. It increases suffering. It doesn't help people.
Now you're getting to the whole moral thing.
Yeah, which I think...
which is what makes my book a little different than a lot of the other books.
That's right. And I think that's, as it should be, it seems to me, as a priest. I mean, you're going to approach this with a certain anthropology, a certain understanding of the human person. I am curious. Are people... you have a chapter in the book called Want to Help the Poor? Start a Business. Is that becoming a common understanding?
It is slowly. I hear that more and more. In fact, the Acton Institute, we're starting this whole thing called Poverty Cure, which is precisely that on an international level. I think people really recognize the sensibility of that, that Maimonides was right, the great Jewish rabbi,
mm-hmm.
who said he had these kind of seven levels of generosity. And the highest level of generosity, well, the next highest was giving to somebody without them knowing that you've given it to them.
Mm.
I think the highest level of generosity was providing a job so that they can support themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Very good. Let me take you back to a question that popped into my head earlier, and I didn't ask it at the time. We were talking about the value of giving people having liberty to make economic choices. Human action not only tells us what people want, but it also tells us what people don't want. It helps people, it helps producers and manufacturers and merchandisers serve better the desires and the needs of people. Now, somebody comes along and says, well, yeah, in principle that sounds good, Al, but, you know, there are 26 different types of cornflakes out there. We don't need that many cornflakes. What do you say to them?
I say, well, somebody says we do. Some people, you know, are saying, I prefer this without this, and I prefer this with this, and I prefer it in this box, and I prefer it in that size box,
mm-hmm.
and I prefer to take it with me to work, and I prefer a big, big box of it because I got a lot of kids. And obviously, they wouldn't be there if there wasn't a demand for those things.
Right.
And indeed, some of them will go out of business, and that's the process of detecting what the market wants. But none of it is wasted. See, that's the important thing.
Right. Let's stay with a similar type argument, only more gripping. What about pornography? What about when people want what is bad for them?
Yeah, and the market will always provide that too.
Sure,
I say that several places in the book.
That yeah.
Freedom does having the freedom to obtain something doesn't mean you're going to choose the right thing.
Right.
To obtain in pornography, like drugs, like other things, is particularly deleterious to the soul and to the family and to the whole way in which we view other people. People in a pornographic culture and mindset view people as objects, not as persons.
Mm-hmm.
They are abstractions. And really what's worth saying here for a moment is that a person who is addicted to pornography should not think of that as just so terribly harmless, you know, just some fun you're having in the privacy of your own home, because it will distort the way you view the opposite sex down the road.
Yeah.
and it will make gratifying relationships more difficult, because no woman can ever approximate a fantasy that's airbrushed
right.
in a photo. So let me be very, very clear that I recognize the danger of pornography and that there are very good Catholic organizations. ReclaimSexualHealth.com is one of them that uses brain science, brain elasticity, helping people to kind of come out of that. I've used that in my own pastoral work in recommending that to people. But the question is the best way of solving the pornographic problem having a government that knows no real standard of purity
right.
issue edicts about what should it shouldn't be? I think it's it gets very complicated, but it's like the drug war.
Well,
do they exacerbate the problem rather than resolve the problem?
Father, hold it there. On the other side of the break, let's come back and pick this up again, because I think this is a neuralgic point for many people. Father Robert Stricko, my guest.
Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
When you want something done right, you go to the experts. With power equipment, you want to go to the guys who know what they're talking about, not the ones wearing the aprons. The experts at Weingarts have you covered from sales to service with people that will help you pick the right equipment for the job and maintain it. Whether you're looking for mowers, tractors, chainsaws, blowers, or generators, Weingarts has a great selection to choose from. Their massive inventory includes all the top quality brands you know and some that you don't. And Weingarts provides world-class service and parts support to keep your equipment running at its best. From at-home delivery and demonstration to our 7-year enhanced protection plan, Weingarts delivers the kind of service you can't get anywhere else. When you're ready to talk to a real expert, stop by our locations in Utica, Farmington Hills, Cedar Springs, Clarkson, and our newest location in Ann Arbor.
Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
The Alexian Brothers, a Catholic religious order of men, look back on 800 years of service.
Our concern was always with feeding the poor, nursing the sick, and burying the dead. There was a time when most of our men were nurses. That's not the case anymore. We have MBAs, mechanics, engineers.
The brothers still serve the poor, the elderly, the sick, and dying.
I knew that as an Alexian brother, I could make a difference in people's lives.
If you're a man generous enough to serve the weakest, call toll-free 1-800-556-0332.
Ave Maria School of Law is a private law school faithful to the Catholic intellectual tradition. Located in Naples, Florida, Ave Maria gives you the opportunity to integrate faith and reason and seeks to educate the whole person by exploring the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law. Our graduates are working in the nation's top law firms and judicial clerkships. Ave Maria School of Law provides financial scholarships. More information is available at avemarialaw.edu.
He was the last man to believe in their cause.
You cannot fight for something you don't believe in.
But became the first willing to die for it.
Freedom is our home, our wives, our children, and we will defend it or die trying.
Academy Award nominee Andy Garcia leads an international cast in a story that begs the question, what price would you pay for freedom?
Que viva Cristo Rey!
For greater glory in theaters June 1st.
All are invited to Ave Maria University's Ann Arbor Founders Club First Friday Breakfast Series, Friday, June 1st at Domino's Farms. Spiritual exercises and the discernment of spirits will be presented by Father Dennis Brown. The event begins at 7 a.m. with Mass in the Lobby C Chapel, followed by a continental breakfast and the presentation in the EBA Cafe in Lobby H. The cost is just $5. To RSVP, call 734-930-3435 or email annarborfounders@gmail.com by Wednesday, May 30th.
Oppose the HHS mandate. Attend the Stand Up For Religious Freedom Rally with Archbishop Alan Vigneron, Teresa Tamayo, Sister Rose Marie Kajawa, priests, ministers, and people of faith. Friday, June 8th, 12 noon at the Detroit Federal Building, 477 Michigan Avenue. Other rallies in Ann Arbor and seven other Michigan cities. See StandUpRally.com. StandUpRally.com. Let your voice be heard.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. Father Mark was serving as a U.S. Navy chaplain when he encountered the extreme poverty of Haiti. He resigned his commission, moved to Haiti, opened the now famous Espoir Orphanage. He's dedicated his life to caring for Haiti's suffering street children. Cross Catholic Outreach gives me the opportunity to financially support Father Mark and other brave missionaries around the globe. You can help. 888-766-2426. That's 888-766-2426. And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. My guest is Father Robert Sirico. He's the author of Defending the Free Market, The Moral Case for a Free Economy. We were talking before the break about freedom, choices that are made in the marketplace. People, 20s can buy 26 different brands of cornflakes. They can also purchase types of pornography, stimulating their desire. And some people would argue, well, the good society or the good government wouldn't permit that kind of choice. How should a Catholic think about it?
Well, I'm always nervous about anyone who conflates good government with good society, because that is the way to totalitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
If we think that everything we need, and St. Thomas talks about this, not so much about pornography as such, because I don't think it existed as such. I mean, certainly he dealt with the moral concept of imagination and everything.
This is before the graphics revolution and the printing press, right?
Let alone the internet, which is, you
know, it's a whole different thing.
But he drew a distinction between what the natural law requires, and he said, and this is in, if I'm not mistaken, in his treaty on law, that governments may not countervene the natural law, but they can't implement every precept of the natural law, that there are certain things that are left open.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a good question. I would suspect that most people in their recognition of how harmful pornography is would say, well, let's just throw the book at it. But I think the question we have to ask ourselves is that going to solve the problem?
Mm-hmm.
And at what cost would it solve the problem? And I think that the market has a whole bunch of great mechanisms that we should exhaust before we go to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not only these screening, the screens, or I forget what they're called, but it prevents you from accessing certain sites.
Right.
The other thing that the market provides is this wonderful expose. I remember once I was in a parish, and next door there was a bar that we had actually allowed, when it was a Chinese restaurant, allowed them to have a license to serve liquor and wine. Well, the man sold the license to a kind of, a pickup joint.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
The guy who ran the pickup joint wanted to have topless dancing, and he came to the church, and he said, I'm just going to let you know that we're going to have topless dancing, and if you're going to go before the city council, I just wanted to know. You know, I want to give you a heads up. I said, I appreciate the heads up. I said, but he said, you're going to go before the city council? I said, no, I don't think so. I said, we're going to pray for you. He said, oh, that's very nice. I said, yeah. I said, we have a group of ladies who pray the rosary, and we're going to pray for you. So that's very kind of you. Thank you. I said, we're going to pray for you out in front of your bar. He said, oh, really? I said, yeah. And I'm giving them all, and this was in the day when the Instamatic camera was a thing, not telephone. I said, we're going to give them all Instamatic cameras to take pictures of your clients going in and out. And that ended it. That ended it right there. It never happened.
Well, see, that kind of responsiveness is good citizenship.
Well, yeah, and so, I mean, we could have spent a lot of money, a lot of aggravation, and got everybody, all worked up about going to the city council. I'm not saying I wouldn't have gone to the city council, in the end, but I don't think that should be our first approach. Let's find a way to get it uprooted culturally, morally, shaming people, boycotting, exposing. I'm not talking about the addicts, because I don't think that's a particularly good thing to do. I guess I just deal with too many people in the confessional to understand what they're going through.
Sure.
They're not there yet. You have to work with them for a while.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of alternatives. And if we say we're going to have the government do it, we think it's solved.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not solved. It's like poverty. It's not solved.
I agree. And I just throw a little story here similar to yours. And that is, I lived in Detroit for 10 years, worked in a particular neighborhood. Just down the block from us, we had, I think there were four convenience stores at one time in a two-block area. You know, they sold everything from, you know, 40-ounce malt liquors to, you know, just a standard convenience store. And one of them began carrying really lurid pornography, and they put it right up in front at the register. So anybody going in there to purchase something would be, you know, face-to-face, or not really face-to-face, but face-to-somebody part with some model. And I couldn't believe it, because my kids would come down to the store, we'd buy milk and stuff like that. So I'd play video games with neighborhood kids there. So I went to the fella, and I said, there was a woman in the store with me at the time. And she had a kid, and I turned to her, and I said, hey, by the way, what do you think of this picture up here? And she threw her eyes up there and saw this naked woman above the on the plastic wall between me and the cashier. And I said, you like those kind of pictures? You like your kids to see those kind of pictures? And I turned to the fella and I said, you know, I live a block from here. You know me. And you know I've got a big mouth. And I'll tell you, I'm going to leave here today and I'm going up and down for a half a mile in each direction. And I'm going to tell people what you're doing to our neighborhood. And I'll be back. If you want to remove this material, I'd rather have you do that than have to go around for a half a mile in each direction, but I will. And sure enough, they took it down. They got rid of the pornography.
Good.
Now, the reason I bring that up, because like you, I mean, I was willing to do more if I had to. I didn't know what I could do at the time. I didn't
right.
know what... But I think personal, that direct confrontation is good. I think that's that is one of those ways I think that liberty thrives.
Yeah, it is, and it gives us a chance to witness. The Internet's more complicated.
It is.
Because, I mean, I know you ask any priest who hears confessions, and what we're hearing now is much different than what we heard 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because it's all Internet.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there are a few of these stores, these peep stores left, but...
Well, the ease of access and the anonymity
right.
has
so
to
So now
be...
we're having to deal with the reality of it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a porn machine in every one of our imagination.
Right.
And how do we solve that? We solve that by transforming our minds, by rehabituating our minds to purity, to chastity.
People say, quoting Gordon Gekko, greed is good. In the movie Wall Street, greed is not good. I know that. You write explicitly about it, and we've talked about it before. Why is greed not good, and why is our free market is not about, quote, greed in that sense?
Greed is not good because it's disordered. What greed is desire, but it's desire taken to an extreme. And let's be very clear, greed isn't just about what the kids call bling.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yes, I think so.
it's not just about fancy things, material things. Greed can also be a quest for status. It can be a quest for ego. Living, fulfilling these false desires that we have. And the reason the market doesn't do that is even in the case of a person who is greedy, they can only be successful in a market to the extent that they offer goods and services that serve other people based on what those other people determine their needs are. Now, the goal of the greedy person in the market may still be disordered. In other words, that person is sinning. Their intentions are not good, and they will be judged for that. But what they're doing is serving people. So that the person who comes up with this incredible way to manufacture eggs or, you know, sandwiches or whatever, may be doing it because they want to make a lot of money, but the process demands them to provide these services for people who want it. Having said that, my own experience of some of the most successful people in the world, I just been blessed with being able to meet a lot of very successful entrepreneurs
mm-hmm.
Because of my writing and stuff. You know, I have
yeah.
these occasions. Is that I don't find it quite as stereotypical
yeah.
as I have never met a Gordon Gekko.
No,
you know, and I've been down on Wall Street more times than most.
That's right. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean they're there. I have no doubt they're there. I meet them, people like that. You know, but you begin to talk to them, and they're trying to find their way. There's a loneliness that's seeking healing.
Yeah. Yeah, the image. This image comes from where? Is it part of our literature? You know, just the idea of the robber baron, this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I think you see it a very good bit in literature dating back to Dickens,
mm-hmm.
You know, and other writers in the 20s. I suppose Hemingway has a bit of it in there, and then Upton
Sinclair.
You kind of come up to the present day, and it's everywhere. You know that it really is. I've often said that Marx's idea of class struggle is a fascinating and resilient taxonomy. It's a way of thinking, and people buy into that even if they don't know that Marx is the one who, you know, kind of invents it from Hegel, and then they play it out, and so it becomes. The worker against the owner of the means of production, or man against woman, or man against his environment, or gay against straight, or colonizer against indigenous people.
Yeah, yeah.
And we look for the conflicts, which of course are the stuff of drama, but we don't see the harmonies that in point of fact the worker needs the person who's going to invest in the means of production, and God knows man needs woman.
Yeah.
You know, all of these kinds of things.
Let me take. We're running out of time, but I want to make sure that we get. Let's since there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but let's go to the healthcare issue here. Healthcare was sold to the American people. The healthcare reform was sold to the American people on the grounds of compassion, that there were those who were not receiving healthcare, and so we all had to kind of go through this so everybody would receive healthcare. Now we find out that the Franciscan University of Steubenville is going to have to abandon its student insurance policy because premiums were doubling. What is this? Why state-sponsored healthcare doesn't seem very compassionate?
You know, it's part of this whole thing that we think we can just wish it into existence and say, well, let the government do it, and then nobody will have to pay for it until you stop and think, well, where does the government get its money from
right.
in the first place? But, you know, we laugh at that, but that's kind of the assumption.
It seems to be.
And I was asked the other day on an interview, do you not believe in universal health care? And I said, I believe in universal health care in the same way that I believe in universal food and universal clothing.
Right, right.
And how is that stuff provided? It's not generally provided by the government.
Right.
It's provided by the market. And I think that again, because the market gives us some information that we need to really see what costs are, I think there's a lot that could be applied to health care. I'm not saying that we eliminate the charitable care for people who are indigent or can't pay.
Sure.
But I think we can bring prices down by having a competitive market.
Yeah.
And I think we've proven that. You know, you and I go into a store and we buy things and we send those signals that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But we ask what the price is for something
right.
before we buy it.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know when the last time you bought something you didn't know the price of before you bought
right.
it.
Right.
Hey, if you go to your doctor today, do you think you know what that visit's going to cost or what the procedure he recommends is going to cost?
Not normally, unfortunately.
Well, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is.
How much more would you use your grocery store if you didn't have to worry if somebody else was paying for your groceries?
Indeed. Father, once again, always great talking with you. Thank you.
You too.
Great
Thank you very
too.
Much.
We'll talk again.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
I'm Clark Durant, founder of Cornerstone Schools Detroit. Will you bring your little light to help a child become all God hopes for, whatever your light may be? For two decades, 95% of Cornerstone students have graduated from high school and become adults of good character. This happens because of the support of others like you. go to cornerstoneschools.org to support our walk at the zoo or to support a student.
Hi, I'm Celia Miles, a Cornerstone graduate. Cornerstone changed my life. Our students need your help. Would you join Clark Durant and me at the zoo June 10th?
God said, "Let there be light," and there was. Let your light shine in a student's life. Visit cornerstoneschools.org.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. As the 2012 presidential campaign begins to ramp up, the mainstream media is ramping up in its effort to bury the issue of religious liberty, to forget the outrage over the HHS mandates, and to shift the focus to a trumped-up war on women. Well, we at StopHHS.com will not allow the mainstream media to be the sole voice forming public opinion. On March 23rd, 65,000 Americans in over 140 cities took the streets to demand that our religious liberty be restored. And on Friday, June 8th, we'll be holding the second National Day of Protest for Religious Liberty. We're committed to increasing those numbers and making an ever bigger statement to our government, the media, and our fellow citizens. We will not, we cannot bow to the HHS mandates, no matter what the cost. So please visit StandUpForReligiousFreedom.com to find locations in your area or to volunteer to be a rally captain in your town. That's StandUpForReligiousFreedom.com, and we'll see you Friday, June 8th. Hey, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me over the last hour. And, you know, just have to remember, too, that in all of these conversations, that Christ's teaching has really been at the root of the expansion of human liberty over the years. I mean, we have comfortable lifestyles in America for the most part. We have plentiful goods. We take these things for granted. And when we do so, we cease to show that capacity of thanksgiving. And we have to remember that our prosperity as well as our liberty is rooted in the inherent dignity of the human person, endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights. And it's part of a package. And that package really is a fruit of historic Christian thinking. A follow-up by going to AveMariaRadio.net. We'd love to see you there. AveMariaRadio.net, the Cresta Guest Archives, as well as going to the blog, CrestaInTheAfternoon.com. Thanks.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineer is Kara Coulter. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Logos Bible Software brings the sacred tradition to life, fully integrated with Scripture. Logos links the Bible to hundreds of books from the works of St. Augustine to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, literally surrounding the Scripture with the tradition. And Logos works on your desktop and your mobile devices, so you can take your vast Catholic library wherever you go. Logos will transform the way you read the Bible. A demo video is available at logos.com/Catholic.
Friday, June 8th, citizens will gather by the thousands in cities across America and stand up for religious freedom. I'm Monica Miller, National Co-Director of Stand Up for Religious Freedom. Please join this public witness June 8th. In January, the Department of Health and Human Services announced a new mandate that forces Catholic employers, including schools and hospitals, to violate church teaching by providing contraceptives and abortion-inducing drugs to their employees. Every bishop has spoken out against the mandate, calling it an attack on religious freedom. The bishops are calling on the faithful to protest the mandate. Join the nationwide rally for religious freedom Friday, June 8th, 12 noon. Find a rally near you at standuprally.com. Stand up for religious freedom June 8th, 12 noon. Learn more at